I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. So...
Start of a brand new year. Yes, 2013 is upon us. All praise be to Allah, right? I tell you what, it's going to be a banner year here in 2013. And no, I'm not hungover. No, I'm not drinking. No, I'm serious. 2013 is going to be an awesome year. And I tell you why. Because people are waking up. People are finally waking up. And this fiscal cliff joke that these Republicans and Democrats are playing, the unit party is messing around with all of our heads. It is going to be the catalyst. We're sick of it. Mr. Martin, how are you, sir?
Doing all right. You might as well call me Mr. Mom today. I've been catching a little grief for it, but I've told people, it's like, yeah, wife's working, kids are out hanging out with friends, and, well, me, I'm just sitting at home vacuuming, doing laundry, cooking.
Well, that doesn't make you Mr. Mom. The kids are out, so that makes you Mr. Wife.
Oh.
You got to get this stuff straight, man. If you're taking care of the kids, you're Mr. Mom. But if you're taking care of, you know, the cooking, the cleaning, and all the other stuff, you're Mr. Wife. And I'll be honest with you. I know what you look like.
I'm just Mr. You know, I got to do something. I'm dying of boredom. I can't bring myself.
Well, you're damn sure.
Bring myself to watch football all day or something like that. It's like, oh
Lord, you damn sure don't qualify as Mr. Excitement telling us that story. I'll be honest with you. I tell you what, a whole lot of news going on in the world today. We're going to get to the fiscal cliff in a minute. Just a couple of quick updates. Rumor has it, and I believe this source very, very well. But rumor has it our good friend, Miss Katie King, the great judge who got the job illegally with her help from Metro Council President Father Jim King, who illegally funded her, is now pregnant with, yep, you guess it, a married man's child. I'll get that confirmed, but that's the rumor right now. My bet is it's probably true, but I just thought that was hilarious. I just got that a few minutes before we went on air, and I quite honestly just stopped laughing about it. I don't know how high she was when she got knocked up, but hey, screwing a married man as a judge, you know, doing all the drugs, what the hell? Have a good time. And other news around the world, the Newtown shooting, the Sandy Hook shooting, we've been following that for weeks now. Apparently, the $100 million lawsuit that was filed against the state of Connecticut has been dropped, reportedly because the attorney who filed it decided that, you know, well, there's new information that just came out. So this just goes to show you one more example of this knee-jerk reaction to an event like the Sandy Hook shooting. All of a sudden, you want to go sue people. Then you realize you don't have the right to sue people because there's nothing there. So this is going to be really interesting as well. And, you know, all of these things are going on at a time when our Congress can't seem to get their stuff together. This fiscal cliff thing, and I say thing because it's laughable to me that we have this so-called fiscal cliff. For those of you, you've heard us continually talk about this fiscal cliff, and Ed, I'm going to get to you in a minute, but I got to do this. The fiscal cliff is really nothing more than terminology, is all it is. In 2011, there was a Budget Control Act passed that the Republicans insisted on. They said if we didn't have this budget, we didn't have these things, by midnight December 31st, that all these temporary payroll tax cuts and George Bush stuff was going to automatically kick in. And, oh, by the way, you're going to be looking at close to $1 trillion in spending cuts. So it's not the tax cuts that anybody really has such a major problem with. It's the fact that the so-called fiscal cliff is going to keep the government from spending an extra $1 trillion that they send to all their cronies so that they can keep their jobs. That essentially is the fiscal cliff, laughable at best. Martin, my question really simply is this. All spending is supposed to originate in the House. Is that correct?
As I understand it, yeah.
As I understand it, all spending is supposed to originate in the House.
In the age of executive orders, who the hell knows, right?
Well, it's interesting to me because the Senate actually had to take a deal on a budget deal. Biden and Mitch McConnell, two of the pieces of garbage we call senators. Biden is now vice president, obviously. How he got that job, I don't know who he was drinking with, but, man, I want to drink with that guy because my life would be set. But these two clowns came up with this so-called budget deal at the last second, a couple hours after midnight last night, sent it to the House thinking, wow, it passed 89-8. The House is going to love this. We've averted this catastrophe. And lo and behold, what happened today, Ed?
Nothing.
Yeah, exactly. The House Democrats and the House Republicans couldn't get it together. Exactly. Nothing happened. Ultimately, what happened was at 3 o'clock this afternoon, they decided they were going to adjourn until tomorrow. The Republicans are livid because there's no spending cuts. They don't go far enough with spending cuts in this so-called budget deal. The Democrats are livid because the Republicans won't bring it onto the floor in the House for a vote. And what's really fascinating is that Democrats themselves in the House do not like this bill. But I thought everybody was going to jump on board, Ed.
Well, I'll begin to, I have to, usually you know me, I'm like Mr. Finance, Mr. Economics. I can't begin to tell you how little I give a crap about this. I've had a lot of people say, Ed, you're like you, Mr. Nerd. What do you think of it? And I said, I think I'm going to sit there and watch the New Year's Eve show and try to figure out who's lip syncing. I said, I truly don't give a crap. This is something that, as you mentioned today, this is something that's been in the works for 2 years. 2 years.
But see, that's the whole thing, though. And that's what really makes this thing laugh.
When they put it in, I remember when they put it in because I was making jokes about it back then. This is like, they're going to say, it's basically spending caps and everything else. They put this in. The idea was they would pass these potential cuts, these automatic cuts, so as to say to themselves, look, we're going to pass these cuts, and they're going to be automatic if we don't come up to a deal because, well, gosh darn it, we're going to be so scared of these cuts that surely to God this will make us come up with a workable deal.
Sure.
It didn't. They even tried basically writing their own punishment, like going out and cutting your own switch. And they couldn't get it right in 2 years. So I'm to a point. It's just like, you know what? They are so dysfunctional. They're writing the rules. They can't come up with something 2 years after the fact using the rules that they wrote.
But Ed,
I don't care anymore.
Even this fiscal cliff, so-called fiscal cliff budget deal that was approved by the Senate. All right, does nothing more than kick the can further down the road. They didn't deal with any of the hard questions. The best they came up with was extending the tax cuts for a little while. They put the middle class tax cuts at $400,000 instead of $250,000, And on top of that, everything else.
I don't know about you, but that's middle class for me.
Hey, I'll tell you what. I wish I made $400,000 a year. I'd be rich. But you look at this. I mean, my lifestyle, I would be. But if you look at this, though, all the other questions that were involved in this damn deal with the fiscal cliff were pushed down what? They were pushed down the road for 2 months. All they basically did is the exact same damn thing that they've been doing for years. They don't agree on anything. They keep extending everything because they can't agree on anything because nobody wants to take responsibility. So they didn't have a deal to begin with. That's what really bothers me and drives me completely nuts. And this is how bad it's gotten, folks, in recent years. In 1981, after 190 years of federal spending, in 1981, Reagan's first year in office, the national debt total was approximately $1 trillion. Now, in 190 years, we brought up $1 trillion in federal debt. Man, if we had that today, it'd be gone overnight. Now, just 30 years later, folks, that national debt has moved to $16 trillion. We didn't have a major war. We didn't have a Great Depression. We didn't have any of these things that are typically blamed for rising national debt. Going into 1981, we had had, you know, we went through both world wars in that 190-year history. We went through a Vietnam War, a Korean War, you name it, insert here. We had recessions. We had depressions in 190 years, and we never went over $1 trillion total in that total 190-year span. In less than 30 years with no wars, no Great Depression, no nothing, dragging this economy down, we went to $16 trillion. And Barack Obama, in his first 4 years, is responsible for more than a third of that in 4 years. Ed, talk to me, man. What in the hell is going on?
Well, you know, I think, honestly, a lot of it has to do with the fact that even back in the day, politicians – they were bought and sold. It was all part of being in the club. But I think ever since, and probably one of the biggest vote buying schemes that ever happened was the war on poverty and stuff like that. Is that and Social Security and stuff went from being what it was. I mean, that's the thing you got to understand. We didn't, prior to the, you know, World War One, World War Two, there weren't any social programs in place. There weren't, you know. Whether you want to call them vote buying or not, I honestly don't think they started off that way. I mean, it started off as a matter of human decency and national pride, you know, and let our old people starve. But in the last 40 years or so, the politicians have come to view that as, you know, a ready source. You know, they can paint it with the compassion that it was originally conceived with, but then they can grease it up just like a paving contract or something. They can throw so damn much money at it. You know, they can, we're going to give kids Social Security. We're going to give drug addicts that are claim disability Social Security. We're going to extend unemployment. We're going to, you know, it's so many things they do. And they do.
Well,
and, of course, you know, the reaction with some of the Republicans in the Bush years was, you know, if we're going to do this, we got to do something for the other side. So somewhere along the way, we ended up with, the, you know, in the past, there would be checks and balances. We've ended up at a point now where both sides insist on something. One side insists on giving less, the other side insists on taking more, and when you put those two together, you can dig a deficit so fast it'll make your head spin.
Well, but it's just so fast, and I tell you, I've got to say it, because I'm loving every bit of this. I really am. I don't care if everything goes belly up here. I really don't, because we need to. We need to. We need to go belly up, and we need to get things back to where they're supposed to be. But one of the biggest myths going around today is, and it's something that was touched on last week, even I made a joke about it, was that the Congress was giving themselves a pay raise. Now, do you realize that is not true, right?
Again, I saw some articles about it, but I don't care.
Well, what's made
I mean, like some, what, I said, it's a little uncharacteristic for me, but I've just gotten to the point that the whole fiscal cliff thing, I just look at it and say, like I said, it's just, you know what, it's reached a level of incompetence that really it's getting to the point that watching politics is like watching American Idol trials.
Well, the reason I even bring this up.
Just the way you see how bad they really are. And you laugh, and then you tune it out.
But there's a reason I bring this up. And the reason I bring this up is because everybody's going around, well, Congress gave themselves a raise. And believe me, I'm no fan of Congress. But for the last few years, every time the congressional raise has come up, Congress has declined it. All right? Nobody really knows that or pays much attention to that. But Congress has actually turned down their raise. They did the same thing as part of this budget deal in the Senate the other night. They turned down the raise. The raise is supposed to be, I think, about $900 or something like that. But as part of the budget deal, they turned down the raise, declined to give themselves this raise. But what makes it hilarious is they did that last year as well. And do you know who insisted on the raise and forced the raise? President Barack Obama. Democrats and Republicans across the board at large all agreed not to give themselves a pay raise. And Obama said, well, you got to have one. Now, that to me is funny. Here's a president who's complaining because nobody can work together. You've got a Congress who, if nothing else, they actually worked together, didn't take a pay raise they wanted to get or everything else. And the president said, hey, you know what? You're going to take it anyway. I just find that funny. I really, truly do. And most people that I talked to today just are starting to get it as well. You know, but when we look at this, Ed, I mean, what is really the problem? What is really the problem? Because when we look at this rapid increase in federal spending, I mean, my God, man, you're talking about, you know, Obama said on Meet the Press on Sunday that he had actually saved $1 trillion, that he saved $1 trillion last year. He was responsible for saving us $1 trillion, that we had $1 trillion more money, which was a lie. Even his Congressional Budget Office said that we were almost $200 billion. We spent almost $200 billion more than we did the year before. So what's going on, man? What is going on here?
Well, again, you know, another thing when it comes to getting reelected, when it comes to playing the games, is politicians like to play their budget, whether it suits them. They'll be talking about either one-year budgets or 10-year budgets. So if Obama, and then, of course, then there's that ever-famous tactic that they use, that a spending cut is not really a spending cut, but if they're scheduled, let's say 6 or 7 years prior, they're scheduled to have a spending increase, and they don't take it, well, they call that a cut. So using that metric, yeah, it's like saying, oh, well, oh, we were queued up to actually spend $1 billion more because we're that stupid.
Well, we really are that stupid.
But we didn't do it, so we'll call it a savings. I mean, it's like, God, it's like if you look down and said, I'm thinking about spending $400 for Christmas.
Right.
You spend $300, and you look at the family and go, I just saved everybody $300. You know, I saved everybody $100. Like, wow,
it's
really?
Incredible. So explain to everybody what this sequester means.
Well,
everybody's scared up.
It was an automatic. It's basically the way they set it up is these were to be automatic cuts done by a mathematical metric or something,
mm-hmm.
to where there was going to be no up or down vote. There was only going to be an up or down vote on what sounded good. You know, it's like, okay, either we arrive at a budget or these automatic spending cuts come in. So they're building these walls in there. Sequestering is just automatic cuts. That's all. It's cuts, and they don't have to vote on them. Basically, they happen not because anybody voted for them, but because nobody could vote for, you know, they couldn't all get their heads together and vote for a budget. So,
right.
You know, this it's done by the machine, I guess you could say. It's an automatic. It's you know, I didn't vote for those cuts. So it's like I say, it was, I don't think they ever intended to do it. I think they just, they hung it out there a couple of years ago, you know, and then and one of the shames of it is the American public forgets things too quickly, and hell, the media forgets things too quickly. They forget that this was all put up because they were trying to show that they had fiscal restraint. That they meant it this time, that they were going to do, you know, they were going to get us a proper budget, and it didn't happen. And now they're, you know, it's 2 years removed, and so few people actually understand where, you know, what the mechanism for these cuts is. Like, oh, it's going to be sequestered. But not by anybody. Not by anybody that's responsible for it. It's just sequestered. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just something that happened. It's like a season. And they can absolve themselves from it if it actually happens. Because nobody is going to sit on Capitol Hill and say, you know, if there's a large government contractor lays people off, nobody has to take the blame for it. Because nobody voted for it.
Well, here's the deal for you, okay? We have got a situation here, all right? This is what we know came from the Senate package. Basically, taxes were going to stay about where they were for most Americans. Individuals making more than $400,000 and couples making more than $450,000 would actually jump up about 4.6%. They would go from 35% now to what the Clinton era rate was at 39.6%. Itemized deductions would be cut for those people making $250,000 a year, married couples of $300,000. Inherited estates, taxes on inheritance, which I don't ever agree with anyway, would go up to 40% from 35%. Of course, unemployment insurance would be extended for another year. You know, child care, tuition, research, blah, 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 all that would be good. Our milk prices would not go up like everybody was screaming the other day about $7 a gallon for milk because of the ag bill, but all that was supposedly fixed. You know, when you look at this, essentially all they did was say, hey, okay, instead of having the drop-off point at 250, we're going to raise it to 400, and we're going to take a couple of these taxes back to where they were during Clinton, which in the grand scheme of things, you're talking 4 to 5% for some of the nation's bigger income earners. You know, I don't think many people had a major problem with those issues. What they didn't address, though, was one thing we hit. I believe it was either yesterday or the day before. We have already hit the debt ceiling again. You know, they don't want to talk about the debt ceiling. We've now hit the debt ceiling again, so that's going to be a major issue. And, oh, by the way, folks, what everybody is overlooking here is, and this is why it's critical and why the House is freaking out right now, when does your new Congress get sworn in, Ed?
Oh, hell.
On Thursday.
Yeah.
On Thursday. That's why they want to get this done, because the Republicans lost some seats in this election in the House. So, you know, they want to get this done before Thursday, because once you get a new house in there on Thursday, then the process has to start all over again, all over again. So we've got all of these things that they're not dealing with. They're not dealing with debt ceiling. They're pushing back the so-called sequester, you know, the automatic cuts in federal spending that have to take effect. And now they're trying to get this thing done before Thursday. I don't think Boehner cares to get it done before Thursday. I think Boehner would love to see this thing continue going on until we get the new Congress in so he can play some games with them. But look at this deal. This is kind of interesting when you get away from the partisan garbage and you start looking at the timing and the relationships and the manipulation in play. It's kind of a fascinating game of chess, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And I've always said this, too. You know, we talk about it, and I have, you know, granted, it's because of my political leanings and socially. I have a lot of friends on the right and the left. Mm-hmm. And to watch the ones on the left celebrate. Oh, yeah. Oh, bitch, yeah. Mitt Romney, your taxes just went up. Har, har, har.
Yeah.
I'm like, guys. You know, I'm not rich, but I do understand how the game's played. Like, look, the rich don't have to take the capital gains. The rich don't have to take straight income. They don't take straight income the way we do. So when they say, oh, people making over 450, it's like, look, I would wager, and it's funny you don't see the mainstream media doing this. Maybe I'll have to research it. But people making over a certain amount of money and logging it as, you know, one type of income or the other, like our Congressman John Yarmouth. They don't take it in salary. They don't take it in salary. They take it at a dividend rate. They take it at a rental rate. They take it at a capital gains rate. Because
John Yarmouth is taking it every which way but
loose. Large, you're making $1 million a year. If you have debt, like a mortgage, you're an idiot.
Let me ask you something, Ed.
They don't have debt. They have a bank full of money, and they can forego. They can forego. I mean, people laugh. Oh, Mitt Romney, you're getting burned now. You know, you'd have won. You'd have been okay. You know, Mitt doesn't care because Mitt doesn't have to take a salary. Mitt doesn't have to take capital gains.
How much does a congressman earn, Ed?
How
much does a congressman earn?
132 or 128, I think.
That's about 175 on average. When you look at this, all right, now, if you remember, Barack Obama wanted the taxes to save everybody below $250,000, but he wanted taxes to go up on everybody above $250,000, right? That was what he wanted. They agreed on $400,000. Now let's look at why they were eager to agree on $400,000 and why the Republicans got what they want. Because the congressmen make about $175,000 on average. In order to stay under that $250,000 threshold that Obama wanted to pay more taxes, that only left $75,000 additional income for that year. So when they send in all this expense money and all the other garbage that they try to do to us, they're going to get off close to that $250,000. But don't forget their spouses. Exactly. Because you look at somebody. Right. Exactly. You look at Mitch McConnell and Elaine Chao, for example. McConnell was Senate Majority Leader. At the time, his wife was in charge, but she was a Secretary of Labor. They were making more than $250,000, but they were making less than $400,000. So the $400,000 threshold is what the Congress wanted, the Democrats included. Don't let them lie to you. And it was all by design to protect their money. They didn't care about you and me, folks. That was just the whole bait switch thing so that they could act like they cared about organized labor, because organized labor people typically don't make $250,000 a year. But they do. Them and their spouses are going to make between $250,000 and $350,000 a year. So they just, it was self-preservation. So that's what I'm talking about. The big joke is that everybody continues thinking we've got this major fiscal cliff because the Republicans and Democrats are torn apart trying to help the little guy. They could give a crap less. They can give a crap less.
They don't give a damn. They don't give a damn. No.
Of course not. And we're going to get into more of this. We're going to take a quick break. Time to get a little something to drink on his throat. But we're going to take a quick break. You guys can call us tonight at 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. Join us in our live chat right here at BTR or IME direct at myviewmatters@AOL.com. You're listening to the Ed Spencer Show, January 1st, 2013, right here on the MVM Radio Network. We will be right back.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Everybody, gather around. I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why.
Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government. The government can.
The government can.
Who can tax the sunrise?
Who can tax the sunrise?
Who can tax the trees?
Who can tax the trees?
Let you run a business and collect up all the fees. The government.
The government.
Oh, the government can.
The government can.
And the government can, 'cause they mix it up with lies and make it all day. To pay for all of their solutions. Healthcare, climate change, pollution. Throw away the Constitution. And who can give a bailout?
Who can give a bailout?
Tell us to behave.
Tell us to behave.
And make the founding fathers roll over in their grave. The government. Government can come to mix it up with lies and make it all taste good.
Make it all taste good.
The government takes everything we make. They're power hungry and malicious. Their economics are fictitious. Soon we'll have to eat our dishes.
my goodness, folks, you just got to love it. You really do. I mean, I thoroughly am having a time of my life. I can't deny that. It's just a great thing. It's a great feeling to be me on January 1st, 2013. Yes, it is. Especially with this joke that's going on that we call a fiscal cliff. Oh, my. You know what's really fascinating about this whole deal, Ed? We've been talking about it for a half hour now. But what's really fascinating about this is it doesn't matter if they avoid all this or not. If the House doesn't act, the tax cuts expire, the tax increases kick in, we're going to have $110 billion in automatic cuts to domestic and military spending, and that's what they're worried about, but that's where they hide a hell of a lot of money is military spending. You're not paying $700 for a toilet seat, folks. You're paying $50 for a toilet seat and $650 to line somebody's ass. But, you know, the whole thing is this. If we just ignored everything, it was going to dampen the economic growth by one-half of 1%, 0.5%. It could possibly, this is the CBO saying this, and the Congressional Budget Office says, by dampening the economic growth by 0.5%, it could possibly tip the U.S. economy back into a recession. Now, when I read that particular term, Ed, I was laughing. Does anybody that actually lives in America, that's an average middle-class guy or below, honestly believe that we are not in a recession already?
Oh, we are. We never came out, you know. They base the recession, and that's just another metric that the government lies about, is they base it on overall economic activity, which, mm-hmm. you know, the guys like you and me, we look at it as, oh, you mean like making cars or paving roads or building houses? And they say, yeah, but they also count Wall Street. Well, you make nothing, but you show a profit. It's like, oh, well, we're not in recession. The economy grew because Wall Street's part of the economy. The banking sector, refinance loans, it's part of the economy. So, yeah, it's a joke.
Well, that's what makes it so funny.
I keep going back to the fiscal cliff, and I keep thinking about all the young kids that are, you know, referred to as Paul Bots and stuff.
Right.
And I've said before, I said, you know, probably the greatest gift we could give our children would be to go over the fiscal cliff in a hurry.
Well, so, what makes it so fascinating, too.
We'll stop racking up the debt. Well, you know what? You hear all these people say, well, we should just learn to pay as we go.
Mm-hmm.
Hello? At the bottom of the fiscal cliff, that's exactly what we're doing.
That's the whole thing.
This is where I look at the Tea Partiers and other people like that. They're like, you know, we need a balanced budget amendment. Well, guess what? The fiscal cliff is pretty damn close to that. So it's like, oh, no, we can't go over the cliff. Oh, yes, we can.
We're already over the cliff. If we weren't over a cliff, we wouldn't be borrowing money left and right. I mean, we're going to have a $1.6 trillion deficit this year alone. And, you know, we've already hit the debt ceiling, so that number may rise even higher because they've got to continue borrowing money. The borrowed money right now, this is really fascinating because the borrowed money right now represents about 70% of our GDP. So we're borrowing money based on 70% of our gross domestic product. You know, folks, we're in worse shape than Greece. We really are. In the grand scheme of things, when you look at America as a whole, as large as we are and the problems we've got and where we're headed financially, Greece is going to look like a daggone blip on the radar in the rearview mirror. It really is. For you guys that are listening in a chat room, for you guys or who are reading in a chat room, I should say, for you guys who want to join us in the chat room, I just put a link in there for the Senate bill that they had agreed to, and I say agree with a laugh because this is a joke. But basically, this is what was sent to the House by McConnell and Biden, so you guys can read it in its entirety on your own. For you guys that are in the listening queue right now, I think I failed to mention that if you want to speak on air, hit the little number one on your dial pad, and that lets me know that you want to be on air so we can bring you on and hear your comments and suggestions. You know, moving forward, you know, the House Republicans are extremely angry right now, Ed. It looks like John Boehner, you know, his laughable Plan B attack was kind of funny, but it looks like John Boehner is going to have a serious problem maintaining his majority position. And quite honestly, there's a lot of people that say Representative Paul Ryan is going to be the biggest threat to John Boehner as House Speaker. What do you think about that?
Well, I think he could. I think he could. You know, I'll be one to admit, I kind of like Paul Ryan. I definitely, along with a number of economists and stuff found flaws with some of the projections that he came up with, and where everybody says, oh, he's a whiz kid. But, you know, I've always liked Paul Ryan because whether you like his plans or not, there's a guy that stood up and said, this is it. Boehner can't do that. You know what?
Well,
the one thing sure as hell.
If nothing else, Paul Ryan definitely brings some stuff to the table for discussion. But at the same time, you know, Paul Ryan, we really got into breaking down Paul Ryan, if you will, during the presidential election this year, you know, or last year, because this is 2013. When we started looking at Paul Ryan, once he was picked as vice president, that opened the door to investigation, research, and everything else. And I'll be honest with you. What I saw with Paul Ryan was two different faces. Whether you like John Boehner or not, and I don't like John Boehner, I think he's an obstructionist of the worst kind. I don't care for him at all. But he's consistent in what he says and does. With Paul Ryan, however, you know, there was a big deal made about the Ryan budget plan and all the other things and the economic projections you just talked about. But what we saw with Paul Ryan was a guy who was saying one thing, and yet when you looked at his votes in the House, they were entirely opposite. And now all of a sudden he is supposed to be key to be the big leader for the GOP or the biggest threat to John Boehner. Now, is this going to help or hurt the conservative base? And I tell you why I asked that question. Because Paul Ryan, if he's willing to vote as a liberal but talk as a conservative, clearly has some room there to negotiate and compromise with. So does that make him great overall, where John Boehner is an obstructionist of the worst kind, who is purely conservative and doesn't back off of anything and doesn't want to compromise at all? What's the better case here? Make a case for Paul Ryan.
I think compromise is important. I do. I tell people, I've learned that as a libertarian, because when you're in such a vast minority, you learn that you can't just force your way on people. Mm-hmm. And but the other side, I've always said it too, the other side is not evil. They're just misguided.
They're all evil, Ed. They're all evil.
If you don't agree with me, you're just slightly mistaken. I'm sorry. But I think you get a good analytical guy like Paul Ryan in there, and that's a good base to start compromising from. And, you know, people treat the word compromise like it's a dirty word. And I tell people, well, it is if you're fake. You know, if you're a fake conservative, you're a neocon, and mm-hmm. somebody says compromise, well, then you don't have a solid set of values. You don't have a solid set of beliefs. Maybe you don't even have your own ideas of what you want when you go in and negotiate for a compromise. And if that's the case, then, you know, you can't compromise, because if you do, you're going to get your ass handed to you.
So here we go, though.
I think Paul Ryan, I think he's intelligent enough that he can come up with good mechanical working, you know, functional compromises where Boehner cannot.
See, I think I see it different. I see Paul Ryan compromising integrity and compromising, just like all other of the unit party do today, and compromising for himself. Just as I used the example a minute ago, the $250,000 versus $400,000 for the tax cuts and everything else, that's what I see in Paul Ryan. Now, am I wrong? I hope so. But if Paul Ryan takes over as Speaker, for one thing, I would love to see some compromise. But I don't want to see compromise on the basic core values of the conservative base. And the only person that I see there, and people are going to argue with me, man, I'm going to be chastised like nothing, and I don't care. But the only person that I see right now is Rand Paul, who will not compromise.
Well, of course, now he's in the Senate. But now,
I'm talking about Congress in general. I apologize. I should have mentioned that. I'm talking about the overall Congress. Rand Paul is the only one who hasn't compromised, in my opinion anyway, who's not willing to compromise basic conservative values and liberty and freedom. And that's across the board. In the House, there is nobody stronger than John Boehner when it comes to not wanting to compromise on those basic issues. So I don't see Boehner.
I don't know about Boehner. I mean, here's some guys that just, you know, they put through NDAA and stuff like that. I don't know. You know what?
So is that proof compromise?
They should get up there, and they're first and foremost, they should be about liberty. Secondly, and a very close second, they should be about legislating in such a way that you know, America works best when America works. So they need to figure out, you know, where they need to regulate and where they need to get the hell out of the way.
Our good friends over Stop It.
I think it's pretty simple beyond that.
Well, our good friends over Stop It just posted in the chat room, a Democratic compromise means that their opposition must agree to the Democrat view. And I think he's right. I think Stop It is absolutely right on that. You know, I think that's it, because Democrats don't understand the word compromise. You know, they want it all their way or no way, or they're going to take the ball and go home. They're the whiny little kid in the playyard. You know, and I don't see that with Boehner. I don't like John Boehner. I think he's an obstructionist. I think there's a time and a place that you have to compromise for the greater good. I really, really do. I don't think that you have to compromise when it comes to liberty. You don't compromise the tenets of the Constitution. But the way that you get there sometimes, like this so-called fiscal cliff, there are things that you have to compromise on to make things work in America. Not when it comes to freedoms and liberty, but when it comes to dollars and cents. And that's where we lose the game at. And I'm not sure Paul Ryan is that guy that's going to pull that off. I really don't. I was very intrigued by Paul Ryan going into the presidential election, but I was very discouraged by Paul Ryan. The more that I investigated, the more I researched, and the more I got to know about his votes and his pattern of behavior. And I don't see anybody on the House side that is going to stand up for liberty and freedom in America. I just don't. And on, like I said, on the Senate side, Rand Paul's the only one across the whole Congress that I see that so far is staying true to his values. Now, he gets berated for that. He gets chastised for that. But he does stand up for liberty. So I guess the next logical question would be this. We've got a fiscal cliff that nothing's going to be done about. It's not going to hurt anything to let this fiscal, so-called fiscal cliff happen. We're not going to lose anything. The CBO has basically said it might put us back into a recession. It might drive up unemployment. But unemployment right now is not going down anyway. It's a lie. It's a falsehood. The only jobs created in the last quarter were government jobs. The government went out and hired people. And the temp jobs for the Christmas season. And by the way, those people all just got let go this week. So, you know, the job numbers are not there. We're still in a recession. If we're going to dampen economic growth by 0.5%, which is what they're talking about, one half of 1%, it's not really going to affect anything, is it? So what's the problem?
Unless it's in your specific sector. But you know, I've said all along, it's the Republicans and the Democrats, neither one is going to let the cuts affect their constituency or their back, you know, their wallets. It's not going to happen. If we went over the cliff outright and people's tax rates went up and cuts were made, you know, there's Congress and the Senate and the House would go into a frenzy, and they would hustle. They would fall over themselves to give it all back. You know, it might take them till April or May or something like that. I guarantee they'd try to get it before the taxes were due. But they'll fall over themselves to give it all back in the form of a check or something. So it's like I say, in some ways, the fiscal cliff would simply have been, you know, that would have simply been like a household that was spending more than they were taking in, having the credit card company put the pinch on them. It's basically what it is. And having the employer look at them and say, guess what, you're going to have to start working a few extra hours. And that's really, they were going to need to boost the income a little. Because everybody says, live within your means. But when it involves cutting, you know, when it involves growing your ox, nobody wants it. When it involves, you know, paying, as you keep saying, pay as we go. And when they say, okay, well, you know, even if we do to cut all the discretionary, we're still going to need a little extra money. So where's your cut? And people immediately say, oh, no. So,
but let's look at the reality here, though.
I think they got it all back asswards, to be real honest. They preserved the tax cuts. That they, oh, we'll get to the spending later, which is all
we already know.
I think they should have slammed the spending cuts through. You know, maybe negated the effects of some of them, but then look at the American people and said, well, how about that? Look at us. We actually cut the spending like we said we were going to. Now that we've done that, would you mind if we raise taxes a little bit, because I think we see a clear path now to reducing the debt. And I think the American people would go for it. But no, they're doing it totally back asswards. They're saying, well, keep spending, keep taxes where they're at, and we'll get around to the spending cuts. which means...
Well, I mean, the thing is, though, Ed...
That's political speak for your deficits are going up.
Well, I mean, that's exactly it, because the thing is, we know that we're running everything ass backwards. We actually touched on that a little bit last night while you were having dinner with the wife. You know, there was a big story that came out about HSBC. Everybody knows about HSBC, you know, the bank, and they're in all this trouble. They got caught laundering all these billions of dollars from Mexican drug cartels and Colombian drug cartels, knowingly, willingly, willfully, you know, doing this. And nobody went to jail or got brought up on charges. The guys that were involved in this weren't brought up on charges. They paid a $1.9 billion fine to the U.S. government, and nobody was brought up on charges or going to jail from the Department of Justice. Okay? Yet, if me or you smoke a joint in America, we're going to jail. Okay? And what that tells me is this. We already know, as we talked about last week, when it comes to spending, prison population is growing exponentially. We're spending tens of billions of dollars each and every year on a prison population because of guys who are out smoking a joint when we need to get those out of jail. You take those people out of jail, that's money saved. For what? Smoking a joint? We're going to let the drug dealers launder their money. The banks get away with it. When the banks go broke spending the drug money or siphoning it off the top, our U.S. government is going to walk in and bail the banks out. They've already proven that. So the problem with us, and the problem with us is how we're wasting our money.
At the very least, the whole time we're sending them a fine, then we're turning around loaning them money for next to nothing, so they can loan it to you on a credit card for 20%.
Well, they're not even doing that. We already found out the credit in this country is shot. You know, half the people in this country don't have good enough credit to get a credit card anymore anyway. But the reality is that the banks are, they just proved once again that white-collar crime is okay, blue-collar crime isn't, and we've got a major problem. We've got all of this stuff spending. We've got all of this stuff spending going on right now because our federal government doesn't want to use common sense in the way that they're appropriating our dollars. I mean, that's the bottom line for me. We could save 30 or 40 billions of dollars a year by getting rid of the people who are smoking the pot, who's paying the drug dealers, who's laundering the money through the bank, and the banks are paying back less than 5% of what they laundered in a fine. How much money did the bank make off of that? In addition, the bank is also going out and getting free money from the American government. You know, and if you're not a bank, then you're an auto company. Let's go to GM. You know, now we're going to sell off the shares of GM that we bought at $50 a share, and we're going to lose $17 or $18 billion on that. That we're not going to get back, but GM is a success story, right? I mean, it's all this little stuff that continues to add up. That's why we have deficit spending. That's why we can't get control. And that's why our congressmen, I mean, the median income for Americans, check this out, the median income for Americans is roughly $50,000 a year. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, the median household income in 2011 was $50,054. The tax cut threshold that they just approved was $400,000. Now, you tell me who this whole damn thing is designed to take care of, the congressmen or the people they represent. That's what's driving me crazy. That's why I laugh so much about this fiscal cliff. What do we do?
Well, you vote them out. I mean, that's always just the first solution. But, you know, it's not just the congressmen. It's their wealthy donors that throw money at them so that they can get reelected. They can just overwhelm anybody that would challenge them. And that's what you're looking at. And that's a whole different discussion for a whole different night. But, you know, the money in politics and the way it goes into politics, it's a hard thing to figure out, but I tell you what, it ain't going to be figured out by the guys that are benefiting from it. That's for sure as hell. But,
well,
you know, it's just what it does is it takes the power, and rather than top, you know, tax the top 2% or the top 1%, now they're getting in the top 0.5% or top 0.2% or something. But that leaves a lot of big money down there. And again, it's income. It's a joke, you know, until they address capital gains, until they find a way to look at it and treat the working man with the same respect that they do the investing man and say, you know what, working man income, investing man income, income's income. Stop insulting the working man with these 28% rates and then a guy who has enough money to play with it on the side, but it's sit in tow for a year. then he can get a 15 to 20% rate. Stop insulting the working man with that crap, and let's get on with it. But they won't do that because that's the money that funds their campaigns. It convinces everybody they're great when they actually suck.
Well, you know, and that's exactly it. You know, I mean, 47% of all congressmen in 2011, at the end of 2011, I haven't got the numbers for 2012 yet, were millionaires. 47% are millionaires. Okay? You want to talk about the top 1%? Please, let's do this. The incoming freshmen in 2012 had a combined net worth of roughly $500 million. All right, now for my liberal friends out there, we continue to want to talk about this. We continue to want to back the daggone Democrats because they're liberals and they care about us. What you don't understand is more than half of the top 10 millionaires in Congress are Democrats. They're the ones who are causing this mess. Joe Biden just agreed to a $400,000 threshold for taxes when a majority of America, according to the median household numbers, only makes 50 grand. You want to talk about taxing the rich and holding everybody accountable? You've got to start looking in a mirror, folks. That's the truth. I mean, Ed, that's what drives me completely bonkers. How do we get this message out to these asinine, silly people who continue believing this liberal agenda actually works or that they're telling the truth? How do you get that message out? And you notice I said liberal, not particularly Democrats. There's liberal Republicans just as there's conservative Democrats.
Yeah.
But you know what? Those people aren't in
you
office.
You know what? I'm gonna take it one better. It's like it's not just liberals. It's not just conservatives because the lies are being perpetrated on both sides of the aisle. You've got the Republicans sitting there telling us, and you know what? It's time to be real with the American people and say, look, yeah, okay, so they're raising the taxes on everybody, making whatever, 360, 400, 450, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And their logic is, you know, well, we need to protect the $250,000 threshold because we need to go higher than that because, you know, wink, wink, nod, nod, you may make that much money someday and you sure wouldn't want to be taxed at that. But you know what? People, look at the statistics. You're not going there. You're not going there. You know, if you're not well on your way, if you don't have a hell of a plan, I'm not going there. You're not going there, Ed. But they hang that lie out there. And the same thing goes for the Democrats. They say, well, we're in it for the working man. Oh, horse crap. You know what? Well, everything they passed, Obamacare and everything, it's for the insurance executives. It's for everybody but the working man. It's going to squeeze the life out of the small business sector, and the working man's going to be SOL. And they're all directly or indirectly taking care of their rich buddies. And that's what it is. And until the people wake up and realize that you're being lied to from both ends of the spectrum, we're screwed.
Well, I mean, that's exactly it. And that's what we've got to really start looking at because nobody is looking after the people. I'm accused of being this crazy conservative and everything else. Nobody really has a clue what the hell I'm all about. I'm not about wealth redistribution. I'm about the American dream. But I'm also about being fair. There is room to compromise. But to sit here and continue trying to play this gimmick financing, you know, because the people are lying to you, I mean, let's look at the reality. Congress has been doing better each and every year. Our congressional members have been doing better each and every year that Congress has been in existence. I mean, in 2009, Representative Daryl Issa, $195 million is what he's worth minimum, $700 million for maximum. Alcee Hastings was the poorest Democrat, all right, supposedly the poorest member of Congress, Democrat, I should say, all right, and she was worth somewhere around $7 million. Out of the top 10 Congress people, six of them are Democrats, four of them are Republicans, six of them are House members, four of them are senators. That's your Congress, folks. The Democrat rich guys outnumber the Republican rich guys in your own damn Congress, and they're the ones out there lying to you and telling you that we're here to make it better for you. Come on.
Yeah. Well, that's the biggest lie that they've perpetrated. But no matter which side you come from, one side wants they tell you different stories, and they try to say, you know, whatever they're trying to sell it on us. And the fact of the matter is, you're right. They're in there. They're the uniparty. They're a bunch of self-serving bastards that are If they're not self-serving directly, they're self-serving indirectly, and they're taking care of their golfing buddies and their investing buddies and their old college buddies, and they're all getting filthy, stinking rich while mm-hmm. the engineering inflation and everybody who actually works for a living is having a harder and harder time filling up their tanks with gas.
At the end of 2010, the last year I have available right now, at the end of 2010, the median wealth of a House member, an elected House member, was roughly $765,000 a year. All right. Or not a year, but that was a relative worth. A senator, for example, was $2.38 million, was their median wealth. Now, I ask you, when you look at the investments they have, all right, they were spending major money on companies that were lobbying them and making political donations. CRP came up with a report that said GE was one of the most popular. And what happened there?
Oh, yeah.
Jeffrey Imelt, the original U.S. outsourcer of jobs at General Electric, was appointed the job czar by Barack Obama. So they're investing in GE and telling the whole world Jeffrey Imelt can create jobs in the U.S. while he's shipping them all to China. You go to YouTube and check out a 12-minute video I have up there on that. And then, of course, who's the other one? The second most popular in 2010 was none other than one of the biggest crooked banks in the world today, Bank of America. Bank of America. Yes, you guessed it. You want to know why they got bailed out? You need to look no further than public record, folks.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
You want to know why they got bailed out? You want to know why there haven't been any prosecutions of idiots like O'Neill who ran the company into the ground? Yep, you're right. You got it right there, friend.
It's totally fascinating. Final thoughts, Ed. Time to wrap up the first show of the new year.
Oh, hell. Final thoughts. It's all theater. Like I said, it's like a cheap theater. It's infinitely predictable. We usually predict it. In our cynical little universe, we usually have no problem predicting what's going to happen next because, you know, they're predictable. They're idiots. Where do you go with it? Don't fixate on the fiscal cliff. I think the important thing anybody can take away from the fiscal cliff, the personal wealth, anything we talk about, the screwing of a little guy, you know, and the enriching of the richest guys.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, you got to vote. You got to vote these bastards out. You got to, you know, develop some self-respect. And don't just look at them and say, oh, well, they're congressmen, they're rich, they're whatever. It's like, no. This is not rocket science. This is, you know, a working man would have looked at a problem. Somebody said, you got 2 years to do it. You got a huge project you got to build or you got to cut down or whatever. And then you got to work on it. These bastards, you get up there, they're given a two-year window saying, look, get on a rise in 2 years. They wait for 700 days later before they start to get to working on it. It's pathetic. It's an insult. And
it is.
People need to get to the point that you're insulted by the way they're acting.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and promote one of your favorite websites. I very rarely like to promote websites other than LouisvillePolitics.com for obvious reasons. LouisvillePolitics.com is the best source of information you got out there. But when we talk about this, folks, go to OpenSecrets.org. Seriously, go to OpenSecrets.org and check out the richest members of Congress. You know, Daryl Issa, Republican. He's got each one of these guys have a minimum net worth and a maximum net worth. So I'm just going to give you the average. Issa, Republican, 448 is his average. $448 million, folks, net worth. Michael McCaul, Republican, average $380 million, folks. Jane Harman, Democrat, California. California is a broken state in the union, but great net worth here, $326 million. John Kerry, Democrat, Massachusetts, $231 million. Mike Warner, Democrat, Virginia, $192 million. Herb Cole, Democrat, Wisconsin, $173 million. Jared Polis, Democrat, Colorado, $143 million. Notice how many Democrats I'm naming off here, folks, in the top 10. Buchanan, Republican out of Florida, $136 million. Nancy Pelosi, wonderful person, right? She cares about the poor people, but her average is $101 million. Jay Rockefeller, of course, another Democrat, $99 million. When you look at this list alone, you have got 7 out of 10 are Democrats, the richest members of Congress. These are the people who are concerned about you poor people out there who's losing your shirt each and every day. Get real. Get informed. start paying attention, because in 2013, we're going to start doing these things for you. Yes, we are. But we're not only going to out the national boys like we've been talking about all night and the so-called fiscal cliff, the joke that they call the fiscal cliff. We're going to do the same thing on a local level right here in Louisville, Kentucky. And, oh, by the way, you folks in Indiana, welcome to the game, Hoosiers. We're going to start hitting the Kentuckiana region hot and heavy. We've already started tonight letting you folks know about Katie King and her pregnancy by a married man. That's just the beginning. You ain't seen nothing yet. Sit tight. Stay tuned. But I think it's a great day to whoop somebody's ass. Ed Martin, by the way, Dale the Truth will not be here tomorrow night. He has a meeting that he's got to go chair. He will be back Thursday night for his TNT show. So tomorrow night will be a wide open lines, folks. Give us a call. We'll talk about whatever you want to talk about. Thursday night TNT with Dale the Truth. And, of course, we're coming up on Sunday, Ken Mulman with Liberty Unbridled. And, by the way, you guys are owed an apology. Apparently, Ken had uploaded a best-of show to be podcast on Sunday in place of him, and for some reason, there was a glitch somewhere. We still have undetermined reason why, but it just did not go off. So you guys are tuned in on Sunday night to listen to Ken's best-of show. I apologize on behalf of MVM Radio, myself, LouisvillePolitics.com, all of us. We don't know why that happened yet. We're still working on the tech issues. I just found out about it a couple of hours ago myself. And once I get that worked out, we won't have any more problems with that. In the meantime, Ed, have a great night. Thanks for listening, folks, and we'll talk to you all tomorrow night.
All right, do the same, Ed.
I've never had one of those days when nothing goes right. Your wife starts bitching about whatever it was she was bitching about last night. So you escape into the bathroom just to sit there on your throne. But after you finish your business, the toilet paper is gone. Well, it's a great day for me to whoop somebody's ass. It's a bad day, so you better get off my back. You might get cold cock if you cross my path, 'cause it's a great day for me to whoop somebody's ass. Well, I was running late for work, so I poured me some coffee to go. And just before I had a flat tire, I spilled it all over my clothes. When the highway patrolman pulled up, I thought the help was on the way. But when he saw the tattoo in my hand, he shot me with pepper spray. Oh, it's a great day for me to whoop somebody's ass. It's a bad day, so you better get off my back. You might get cold cock if you cross my path, 'cause it's a great day, I'm saying it, they gon' do, for me to whoop somebody. When I finally made it to work, I was 15 minutes late. I told my boss about the flat tire, but he fired me anyway. So here I am out in the parking lot, just waiting by his Corvette. I'm gonna give him a goodbye present that he never will forget. I think it's a great day for me to whoop somebody's ass. It's a bad day, so you better get off my back. You might get cold cocked if you cross my path, 'cause it's a great